So this is my second Dark Patterns talk. Some of you may have seen this before on SlideShare, or if you came to the thing last night, you might have seen like a 5-minute snippet of it. So if you've seen it before, you can be forgiven for playing with your iPhones for the next 20 minutes. But for the rest of you, my new Dark Patterns talk. So it's about basically looking at dark patterns from a brand owner's perspective and what they actually mean, okay? Okay, so as a brand owner, or if you're not a brand owner, pretend you are for the sake of this rhetorical question, what's one of the worst things that can happen to your brand online? I mean, think about what could kind of go wrong. Well, here's an example of something that would be pretty bad, is having someone typing in your brand name into Google and then finding that under the autocomplete suggestions in Google Instant, the word scam or spam comes up. I mean, it's the world's most trafficked site. It's pretty awful. So what's going to happen is users will say, oh, what's that? They'll click on it, and then they'll read the content, click on one of the links below, and then they'll start learning about what other users have been complaining, right? There you go. So let's have a look at that particular example. I've only really picked it because, it'll be kind of obvious why I picked it in a minute, but kind of fairly at random. So let's have a look. It's Twificiency, I think some of you probably have tried before because it was this kind of overnight Twitter thing that kind of then burnt out. So the idea of it is that it's kind of a one-shot app where you just go in and it gives you a score for how efficiently you use Twitter, right? So you can kind of compare it to your friends and stuff. So you can kind of come along and go, oh, I want to calculate my Twificiency. And you click there and then you're taken to the Twitter OAuth page and it'll say, you'll obviously click allow, because if you click deny, it's not going to work, right? And then you get your score. I was kind of disappointed. Don't really know what that means. 47% sounds bad, though. So you think, oh, that's it. It's over. It's finished. Actually, something else has happened behind the scenes. It's also gone into your account and sent out a tweet on your behalf, like that. And this is what happened to Marissa Mayer, which made me quite happy if you look at her score and then mine slightly higher. if it's going to catch her out, obviously she's VP of Search and UX at Google, it's going to catch pretty much anyone out, right? It's doing something you didn't expect it to do. It's going behind your back. As a result, what was happening is people would do this, their friends would see it and say, well, they're a credible, trusted source. I will click on that because I trust my friend. And it, then two would go to four, to eight would go exponentially. So as a result, kind of overnight, you had this viral expansion. But the thing about it was, it's not kind of good viral, like kind of ad people talk about, word of mouth viral. This is bad viral, like herpes or the flu or whatever. So the guys who make Twificiency, they would probably say, well, actually, if you care to read all of the writing on the page, you'll see at the bottom we've clearly stated that it will tweet your score on your behalf. So, you know, it's your fault for not reading it thoroughly. So on the one hand, probably from a legal point of view, if a solicitor went through all of this, they'd say, well, yeah, it does say it. So, in reality, the information has been buried. They've used visual hierarchy to their own fiendish means, really. And they buried the information down at the bottom. As a result, it went viral. Loads of people were really, really upset about the fact that I've censored it off. I did this in a corporate event a few weeks ago, so I didn't want to have park written all over it. Everyone got really annoyed, funnily enough. So it's kind of funny if you think about it, because in a sense, what the guys who made the app were trying to do was actually the right thing to do. Like, at the kind of most abstract level, they wanted to improve their conversion rates. They wanted as many people as possible to adopt and use the app. And that in itself is the right thing to do. But the way they went about it was obviously kind of over the top, going beyond what they should have done. So kind of on the one side, you've got this idea of honest patterns, where you're just trying to persuade people by being clear with them about what, like kind of engaging with them, being clear with them about what you want them to do. And then on the other side, you kind of say you want them to do one thing, and actually it ends up something else happens entirely. And in fact, in that case, the dark pattern we're talking about is called friend spam. I found that term on TechCrunch used a few times, so I took it and put it on the wiki, and that's kind of the term that's being used for it now. It's kind of obvious, really, when you think about it. You don't want to have someone go into your account and tweet stuff on your behalf. So I'm going to use another example now. Here's Credit Expert. You might have heard of them. They do credit score stuff from Experian, and they have the exact same thing happen. So when you go in and Google for them, type in their brand name, the suggestions that come up is cancel, login, scam, etc. So it's kind of really bad PR for them having these suggestions. And the way, I don't know if I mentioned it, but that's calculated based on other users' queries. So it's aggregated based on other user queries. It's not based, as well as other information as well. It's quite a complex algorithm, as you can imagine, but it's completely different to the way this stuff's calculated. So in a way, this is like the vocal minority, people who bother to publish stuff online. And this is people who are just Googling. It's kind of passive. They're not actively trying to publish this stuff. So it's a reflection of information you wouldn't normally get to see until now, that is. And in a way, if you look at it, you can see, okay, so people are complaining about scammy stuff and something to do with cancelling as well. So we already know issues relating to cancelling and scammy stuff. So what do they do? What are they doing on the site that gets them that reputation? Well, this is the homepage. You know, it's as shown on TV, whatever you can see. It looks fairly professionally put together. And you can see the word free is used in numerous places. It says, join us, 30-day free trial. It's free to check your credit report, get your free credit report. And if you click this button here, you get taken straight into a wizard in which they ask for your personal details and all that sort of stuff. As you click through that multi-page wizard, you come to a page that looks like this. It's like, oh, my card details. I thought that was it was going to be free. It said free numerous times earlier on. So they've obviously realised people will be asking themselves this, because right at the top of the page, they kind of head the question off. They say, why do we need your card details? And this sentence or two sentences here are really cleverly constructed. If you think about the idea of a reverse pyramid copywriting and how normally in good microcopy or web copywriting you always try and say the most important statement up front that summarizes everything and then you go into more detail. So if you read the first sentence there, your card is used to verify your identity, and then you stop, you'd probably think, well, okay, it's just being used for that. If you then read, don't worry, so your card is being used to verify your identity, don't worry, you think, oh, good, it's not being used to charge me, I shouldn't worry. And then your card will not be charged. And it's still kind of giving you that message all the way along. So if you cut it anywhere along that first line, it's kind of reassuring you. But then if you read it very thoroughly in all the text, you'll realise what they're actually saying is, your card is used to charge you once a month for the rest of your life after the trial ends. So it's kind of, they've clearly done a lot of work on constructing that. And if you look at sort of normal UX copywriting guidelines, they've kind of gone through them all and inverted them for anti-readability to kind of portray a different message, but also if you read it really thoroughly, it portrays the correct one. Very clever stuff. So, I mean, you can imagine as a result, lots of people feel scammed, right? So you'll sign up, you'll think it's free, leave it a few months, check your credit card bill, and suddenly you've got this like load of $7.99 payments per month coming out. So this is kind of typical review, devious and unscrupulous, obtaining revenue by small print deception. Now, if we look at a white hat example of the exact same thing, so lockdown, they go from free to paid, so free trial to a paid plan, they roll you over, just like they do on Credit Expert. But let's see how they do the communication on this page. So you'll not be billed until your free trial ends, cancel any time, it's very clear. Say it again, highlighted, and in bold. They say it again here, phrase differently, here again, phrase differently, then again at the bottom. So it's unlikely you can get through this page without realizing that it's going to roll over onto a paid plan. So as a result, LoveFilm don't get auto-completed with the word scam, and Credit Expert do. That dot pattern that's used by Credit Expert is called false continuation or false continuity. It's a term used in marketing, actually. I kind of co-opted it. So no dark patterns talk would be complete without the Ryanair example, which I'm sure I've probably talked to you all about before. But with Ryanair, I tried the autocomplete thing. So Ryanair, what's it going to autocomplete to? And it didn't autocomplete with the word Ryanair in the end. I thought, oh, that's not such a good idea. Not so good for my talk. You know, the autocomplete suggestions. But then I tried a different phrase. And so this is on google.co.uk. So it's... It's a reflection of sort of our sort of national way of thinking, national psyche. I hate Ryanair, my life, my job, love stories, and myself. But if we have a look at what Ryanair actually does, so that obviously you're buying a ticket, you get to this certain page in the checkout just before you're going to pay, where they try and upsell stuff to you. They want, obviously, low-cost airlines like this, they don't make money on the tickets. They make money on, you know, charging you loads of money for a bottle of water on the flight, or for trying to sell you a cabin bag or whatever. And what they've cleverly done at the top there, in that really innocuous-looking box called passenger details, if we just zoom in a bit. So this looks like it's saying passenger details, like you must fill this in, it's for your ticket. And in fact, it's an upsell form. It's saying, do you want to buy insurance, should be the title. Should be the title up there. Yes. See, Donna hasn't seen it before. That's great. I mean, one person in the audience is surprised. If you fill in that form diligently, and then you get to please select a country of residence, and you'd say, well, I'll select my country of residence. And in fact, if you do, you'll then be billed for insurance, which is a very high profit margin for them. And if you don't want travel insurance, well, you'd have to read that all very thoroughly to realise what you have to do. You click on that drop down there. Click on that drop down there. And then down here, sandwiched between Latvia and Lithuania, is no travel insurance required. Yeah. It's like, what, I can't quite imagine why they chose to put it right there. Someone must have made a decision thinking, well, do I put it off the bottom? Oh, no, that would be too much. I've got to put it within the non, like above the fold sort of thing. Let's just shove it there, the N between L and the other L. And I mean, you might think that's just crappy design, but it's not. They're doing it to sell travel insurance because that's how they make their money. They don't make their money on the tickets. So that's called trick questions, funnily enough. And they're used extensively on loads of different sites. So what I've kind of realised in thinking about this stuff, sitting at home and ruminating late at night, is one of the things that all the dark patterns have in common is that they all have really poor expectation management. Now, this is sometimes completely on purpose, or it might just be by mistake, just because of poor design. But then once you've launched something that has poor expectation management and your company is profiting from it, it's very hard to go back to not doing that and to reducing the revenue level. So I'm guessing that you're thinking at this point, well, you know, why do I have to care about this stuff? You know, I'm not, in our business, we're not doing like dodgy Twitter apps or trying to sell people on scammy insurance or anything. But I'd guess that your organization or places that you're consulting for or freelancing for are using tricks like this without you realizing. And you should take it upon yourself as a designer working for them to make it clear to them what they're actually doing and to help them realize that they need to replace the dark patterns with honest patterns, because it's good. It's going to get rid of those negative suggestions in Google autocomplete and generally make their customers much, much happier. Okay, so now I'm going to give you a bit of an insight into some work we've done at Magix. And basically, I'm going to talk about how we've... It was basically a piece of design work we did where we looked at lots of options. Some of them could be construed as dark patterns, some of them not, and the kind of thinking process we went through, okay? Oh, you want to turn that one off?
Yeah.
It'd be one of them. There, yeah. So, yeah, how do we use honest patterns? This, yeah, bit of a sales pitch, this one, I forgot. So how do we use honest patterns to improve conversion rates? Because obviously the end goal is to improve your conversion rates. What do we do? And so we wanted to increase conversion rates for email alert creation. So an email alert on any kind of classified systems, be it eBay or a dating site or a job board like us, is basically someone comes along and they say, well, send me an email whenever you have new inventory that matches these criteria. Now, originally, about 9 years ago, with the original Magix job board platform, it was quite a laborious process. I mean, most systems in those days required you to log in, to register, fill in a long registration form, then click an activation link in your email to verify that you do indeed own that email address. And then by the time you've finished, you're all verified and ready to go. And then you can create your email alert or do whatever it is that's behind the registration barrier. So that's tedious, right? I mean, that's obviously a long, tedious process. And we knew we could do better. And we'd also seen that from our analytics that once people are signed up to email alerts, the application rates off the email alerts are So job applications, it's a very high value thing that people do on job boards. We want them to go on and apply, and then recruiters are happy, and then they'll post more jobs, putting money into the system. So the email alert application rate tends to be like double what you get off organic traffic. So if we could only get more people signed up, then there'll be more applications, therefore recruiters will be more happy, and so on and so forth. So essentially what we'd identified was a bottleneck. We need to get more people signed up. How are we going to do it? The moment they're all giving up because it's a tedious process. So we had lots of options. Option one, I'm going to like list sort of three or four options now. One of them was sort of on the job application form. We thought, well, wouldn't it be easy to just make that tick box at the bottom of the form pre-selected? And that way, whenever anyone applies for a job, they'll be more likely to leave that ticked, and therefore more email alerts will be created as a result. But the problem with that is, basically, yeah, it will inflate. That would be guaranteed to inflate the number of email alerts created. Changing the defaults always has a positive impact in sort of to that metric initially, at least. But it's really annoying. I mean, if imagine you applied for a job, left it a week, came back, checked your email, and you've got like seven emails all just sitting there from the same place. And you're like, why have I got these? That feels like spam, and that's bad. Another option would be to, this sounds a bit devious actually, automatically create email alerts for all searches for people who are logged in. And what you could do is when someone's logged in, they run a search, you like at the top of the search listener, you could say, oh, we've actually saved your search as an alert. That might sound crazy, but that's what Prime Location does for all their logged in users. So it is a technique that is used. But you can think about it, it's also going to be incredibly annoying for people who have done a search but they haven't fully constructed their search properly. So another option we considered was basically to take their criteria. So for people who have already signed up for an email alert, we wouldn't always send them an email, right? Because sometimes there's no inventory that matches their criteria. So we thought, well, maybe we could just broaden it. That's what some sites do. They'll kind of go, oh, well, you want this, but we've got this other thing that's nearby, let's recommend that to you. But I mean, I guess when you look at it in like this, which I kind of I chose an extreme example to kind of make the point, is it's definitely going to inflate the number of emails sent, but people are asking for one thing, you're giving them another, so it can't be a good thing. So what we ended up going for was to basically just remove all the steps from the sequence. So someone comes along, they do a search, and at the top of the search results page, there's a little area here where you can say, yeah, email me jobs that match these results. So they've already constructed their query. All they're doing now is just saying, there's my email address, send them to me. And then straight away, they get this confirmation on the same page. So that has a beneficial effect to you, the owner of the site. And the cost is, well, you know, that's not going to annoy users because you've enabled them to do the thing they wanted to do very quickly. So basically, yeah, we went through, looked at all of those options and just said anything that seemed remotely dark, we just discarded instantly. So we went for that final option there. And we made it easy for them to sign up. We also made it very easy for them to cancel it afterwards, as I think would be the ethical thing to do, right? So did it pay off? Here's some sort of gratuitous graphy things. So this is, like, really kindly, some of our client at Haymarket has allowed us to publish some data, although they asked us to scrub off the actual conversion rate from the axis. So I don't think I need to tell you at the point at which they moved from the old platform to the new one with a new system. So on this system, you had to sign up, you had to register, then click, you get sent an email, click on the email link, then go back and you've created the email alert. And then afterwards it was one click. And that's actually a doubling in the conversion rate. So we kind of took a multi-step process and made it into a single text field with a submit button. And it had that effect, which is just brilliant. We'd run the same sort of queries on a different site. This is in Asia, Campaign Job, so it's a different audience entirely to Brand Republic. And really similar pattern they launched. So it's really obvious when they launched there as well. So I guess my point is that you don't... dark patterns may be tempting and they may have an easy payoff, but you don't actually have to do that sort of thing. In this case, we've got a really good uplift in email alert creation. We've had no complaints about it because ultimately we've let people do what they want to do quickly. So kind of wrapping up, your website's UI, I think, defines your brand's personality. And I think my point is, if someone really wants to use dark patterns, I think they can do. I think there's ways to do that legally. But I think the worst thing is a brand using dark patterns without realizing the impact that it's having on them, because that's just stupid. So I think you get to choose who you want to be. And I think if you want to be an Arthur Daly-like character, if you want your site to be a kind of cheap, like the cheapest possible site, which sometimes tricks some users to, then, you know, go ahead. So long as you know what you're doing, go ahead and do it. You get to choose who you want to be, basically. Thanks very much. Thanks for listening.